You are listening to the sassiest podcast in the world. Born in the Nordics, democratizing B2B SaaS knowledge everywhere.
Hi, I'm Daniel.
And I'm Thomas, and we are experienced SaaS professionals that are curious about how other successful SaaS companies go to market, scale, build winning teams, and great products.
Join us on our journey as we speak to SaaS leaders trying to get hold of their secret sauce.
And today's guest is Dan Assen, the founder at SwipeGuide.
It's also a bit of education. A solution like SwipeGuide is relatively new for manufacturing companies, so they have to see how this makes an impact coming from paper documentation, Word, Excel files, to a solution that's completely new, and how that resonates with their audience, for instance, and how that moves the needle on their KPIs.
Are you building a SaaS business? Achieving ISO 27001 or SOC 2 compliance can help you win bigger deals, enter new markets, and deepen trust with your customers. But it can also cost you real time and money. Vanta automates up to 90% of the work needed to get and stay compliant. Get audit ready in weeks instead of months and save up to 85% of associated cost. Over 6,000 fast-growing companies use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Sassiest listeners get 20% off Vanta at vanta.com/sassiest. That's vanta.com/sassiest.
Welcome back to the Sassiest podcast. This might be your first episode, but I think it also might be one of many that you have listened to. And we have just pulled off the Sassiest 2024 event here in Malmö, Sweden. So Daniel, how do you feel?
I'm still high on adrenaline, and I just feel like I could we could pull off another one here in no time now, in just a few weeks. And I know I say that because just a few weeks before the event,
yeah,
you know, it's a little bit stressful.
Yeah.
We must admit it's a little bit stressful. There's some tight deadlines and so on. But once you're in it and once you've delivered it, and thank you all for joining us, for being there, and for the great feedback, that's worth it. And then we feel like we should do another one right now.
Absolutely. That's has been my feeling all of the years as well, that you want to do it. And also you see the small things that you want to improve. You get connected with a lot of new people and you get inspired of doing new things. But fortunately, we need to start planning for the next Sassiest already now, because we are heading to Amsterdam. It's October 1st and 2nd. So not much rest here. So looking forward to that as well. And if you are listening from that region, you should definitely block this in your calendar.
Yeah. And Thomas, is it really a job when you have fun?
Not really.
It's more of a hobby.
More of a hobby. And that's how it started as well.
Yeah.
It's just a hobby, so we don't need to work without stuff, right?
Exactly. Lots of fun. And once again, you know, big thanks to everybody that has been with us from the beginning, that's showing up to everything we do, to the events, listening to the podcast. And now we're going to like feed you, I dare to say, lots of great content coming up to your summer, and hopefully we'll entertain you a little bit during your summer period. So we have a fantastic guest with us here today, and we're going to address a topic that is super relevant. You guys have actually come to us and said like, hey, this entire exercise with running pilots is a tricky one. Can we talk a little bit about it? So that's exactly what we're going to do today. We're going to talk about how to run pilots.
Here we go. Today, we have Dan Assen, the founder at SwipeGuide, as a guest here in the Sassiest podcast. Great to have you here, Dan.
Yeah, thanks, Thomas. Thanks, Daniel. Great to be here. Thanks for the invite. Yeah.
And is Dan a common name in the Netherlands?
Yeah, well, actually, my official name is Daniel, but in the Netherlands, we have this strange habit of making it a double A, shorten it with a double A, and then make it unpronounceable internationally. So that's where it comes from.
Yeah, I can understand that you don't want to call yourself Daniel, right?
What? Yeah. What? He's just jealous. Like, you know, some of the most successful people in history in sports are Daniels. Like, if you go in football, hockey, I don't know what you play in Netherlands. What are you good at in Netherlands, team sports?
Well, I would like to say soccer, but we only won one trophy, but at least that's my sport. I think, ice skating. I think normally at the Olympics with ice skating, we win a lot of medals, yeah.
You have your own sport, like speed skating.
Speed skating, yeah, that's what it is, yeah. Yeah, you go around in circles and try to be the fastest, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and do you exercise any of these yourself, or you're just dedicated to football?
I'm a big football fan, so, and I play football myself and have played football, but of course when you live in the Netherlands you also do some ice skating, and you sometimes have these tours where you do like 50 kilometers across the lakes.
We've heard, yeah, they'll take your passport otherwise if you don't agree to be part of those.
Yeah, so, like even the king is skating the in Dutch the Elfstedentocht, so the long distance trip in up in the north, yeah, but that hasn't been skated for years due to I think the climate change, because we didn't have a lot of ice here in the Netherlands in the recent years.
Okay. Yeah, so Thomas and I are big football fans as well. We have to know, which one is your favorite team?
Well, I live in the east in the Netherlands, so we have a local team here that I support since my early days. That is called FC Twente.
We know them.
Yeah, we know it.
Yeah, so that is my team. And then, of course, our office is in Amsterdam, so there you have Ajax. So I sometimes visit the Ajax games, but if the two play against each other, it's always Twente for me.
I mean, there's something special with rooting for the home team, and I mean this in the best possible way, for the underdogs a little bit.
Yeah.
Where football is still pure and money doesn't control at all.
No, I think it's quite similar to running a startup company. You have to experience the pain of a lot of losses and then cheer when you're finally winning.
So speaking of winning, so obviously we know that your name is Daniel. We know that you're into sports. What else can you tell us about your professional background? Like, how did you end up where you are right now?
My background is in educational science and technology, and I combined that with business administration. So my combination has always been companies and then the side of knowledge and learning, so to say. I started my career in consulting, like helping companies in the field of knowledge management mainly. And then when internet technology really picked up in 2000, I joined my first internet startup, not as a founder, but just as an employee with an option scheme. So you were a bit entrepreneurial, but you know what happened after the 2000s with the internet bubble. So the options were not the greatest, but it was a really fun journey, because there I really enrolled in the field of technology. So we were the first sort of cloud provider in Europe back then, and I was running a business unit that was delivering e-learning solutions in the cloud, so to say, mm-hmm. based off of third-party software. And then after that, and after doing my business administration, my MBA, I started my own company in 2007 in e-learning. At some point after 7 years, when the company matured, I got a bit restless and wanted to start something new. So I joined a community starter squad, where we were sort of a venture lab, creating a lot of different ventures. And then at one point, one of them, Swipe Guide, really took off when I met a co-founder there. And I joined Swipe Guide, which of course still is closely related to my original profession, and has everything I like about running a business. Yeah.
All right. Interesting. So, can you tell us a little bit more about Swipe Guide?
Yeah. So, at Swipe Guide, we've built a cloud software solution that is aimed to help manufacturing and engineering companies capture, share, and improve their critical operational knowledge. So everything you have to do, for instance, in a factory, from operating a machine, doing maintenance, doing changeovers, we document in a highly visual way, so with multimedia, making it very easy to document your processes on how to do things in the factory in the appropriate way, making sure that data is seamlessly available in the workflow of the frontline workers, so that they can be trained on the job, but also always have the support available to do the best job possible, or the safest job, or the most efficient job, so to say.
Right.
And from that, we collect, of course, a lot of data, how knowledge is traveling within the company. And one of the parts that we added last year is the skills management part, because we saw that a lot of the knowledge in Swipe Guide was used for for training people, and companies want to then track like how is our workforce doing. So we added a skills management solution on top of that that builds your skills matrices, knows where people are that have certain skills, so you can solve issues quicker and make sure that you're compliant and so on and so on. So that's what we do with our team. So it's B2B software, mainly enterprise clients in manufacturing.
Okay.
All right. And are there any particular type of clientele? Do you have to be of a certain size? Do I have to be the Heinekens of this world where this applies? Or can I be a smaller manufacturer? Like, are there certain verticals that are extra key for you?
We started off mainly in food and beverage. Heineken and PepsiCo were some of the first clients that we had. I think there you have, we had a good impact. So when you look at the companies, we say like above at least 10 production sites, the benefits get bigger because then the best practice knowledge that you capture in the one site, you can easily share across multiple sites with the auto translation that we, of course, have built in. So knowledge can then travel easily across the globe. So especially with a company like Heineken, of course, they produce drinks like across the globe in sort of similar processes. So then it really is very beneficial if you have one platform across all these breweries to scale that knowledge around the globe. Yeah.
Yeah. I must ask, how do you land a customer like Heineken when you are sort of a quite early startup?
Well, that was pretty funny because actually originally with Swipeguide, we thought we want to build a platform for user manuals. So actually the first clients that we had were more in the consumer space. But then at some point, we got an inbound lead from Heineken. And they reached out and said, like, okay, that solution that you've built looks pretty interesting, but we want to use it slightly different. We want to use it for work instructions in our brewery. So that's how it started. And then we landed with the digital innovation department that they have. And I think there, what we've seen is you need to have somebody that is a believer. Eh? So yeah. We were pretty new, of course. This was not a field that was already existent. Most of our customers still worked with paper documentation or Word and Excel and PowerPoint hidden in a SharePoint environment. And there was pain, but the pain was not clear enough in most cases. Our solution was pretty new to them, but they saw it, and then we really had some believers. So I remember a quote from back then by the supply chain manager. He said, "We have a philosophy, don't get ready, get started."
Okay.
So I always liked that quote because most of the companies are don't get started, get ready, and then spend a lot of time in thinking about, okay, how do we want to approach things? And they were just like, okay, here is a first brewery, just start there. They have some issues in the packaging line. Can you solve it and prove it?
We like that.
Yeah.
We can sign off on that. Yeah, that philosophy.
I like that too, because that is the mentality that drives innovation in large companies like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And you mentioned it was an inbound lead. So more exactly, do you know where they come from? Was it Google search or something else?
It was Google. Yeah. I don't even remember exactly if it was AdWords, probably a specific campaign that we were
that's cool.
running that all of a sudden brought them in. Yeah, you have to have some luck here and there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You don't need to tell us that. So, so just to get some perspective and about the size of your operation and so on, could you tell us something about your current ARR and growth rate?
Yes. So we currently have a team of 30, 35, depends a bit on how you count. We have some freelance support here and there, ARR number around 3 million, and growing at a steady pace. Like I think we're at that famous 40 rule.
Okay.
So we have a good retention and add new customers every year and expand the existing ones. Yeah.
All right. That's where you want to be. And when it comes to customers, how many customers do you have?
We have around, I think now 100 customers. So with customers, I mean the logos. Of course, under these customers, we have a lot of sites. So we see that actually as individual customers, that would be around, I think, 450 sites globally.
Yeah, and of course, that's very different if you're working with enterprise like you guys do, or if you're working with smaller customers. So
yeah,
that makes sense. And is there any particular markets that you actively work towards? I understand that many of these companies are global, but when you do outreach yourself, is there any particular markets that you go for?
Yeah, I think in our field, we saw that, of course, at some point, trust is very important. Like, is it a solution for us? Manufacturing is more or less the space that we're in. So you see there that companies want to see similar logos to build some trust that it's also a solution for them. So we started off from that story with Heineken focusing on food and beverage. So we identified that as a niche from the results that we were getting there. But we also experienced that it's a relatively slow market, that it's not like, hey, we have to implement something in the next 6 months. It's more like we have to implement something in the next 5 years, so to say. So we are a bit broader, CPG, some industrial manufacturing. So over time it grew a bit. I would say it's maybe a bit more jobs to be done. So more focused on what are companies trying to achieve, because we always had a discussion like, are we really like a vertical solution for food and beverage manufacturing, or is it a bit more horizontal? And over time, we learned that we can be a bit more horizontal if you focus on the specific use cases. Yeah. So onboarding of frontline employees, for instance, is important for a company like Heineken, but we also have like now even a supermarket using our platform. So we're still a bit finding out also how broad can we go, or how narrow will we be. Yeah,
makes sense. So how have you funded this operation so far?
We started off like back in building the first prototypes. We funded it ourselves. So the first year was our own funding, and then we landed an angel investment and did two VC rounds so far.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did you do a quite early VC round as well?
Well, the early round, I would say, was the angel round.
Okay, yeah.
But the first VC round was really at a point where we sort of had that product market fit for food and beverage.
Okay,
when you land the first customers in that segment, then, of course, you have a bit more proof to have a VC case. And at that point, we had our first VC investment, yeah.
Okay. Do you think you took external capital too early and diluted yourself as a founder?
No, I don't think so, because like one of the things that we saw in when you start in enterprise is that the demands of your customers are quickly growing, and to sort of then build the solution from your own cash flow has a risk of not being quick enough and them starting to look around for other solutions. So
yeah,
we were always aware, like, okay, we can play in the area of big enterprise organizations, but then we need to speed up our development.
Yeah, that's always something you need to consider, how fast you need to move, right, to capture the market. And lastly, how much of the company do you and the other founders and employee own at the moment?
Well, the exact ownership number, I don't think I can mention, but we are still in control with the founders and the team, so owning our ownership part. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Very cool. So congratulations so far on this exciting journey. And now we're going to flip the tables a little bit. You're going to share some learning and insights from your journey. And you guys have done quite a few pilots, you know, to land these customers, to win them, to expand them, and so on. And the pilot exercise is a heavily debated topic in our community. You know, what is a pilot? How should it be done? How do we measure success, and so on? And we thought we should pick your brain a little bit. So let's just start off with your definition of a pilot. Like, when you say we are running a pilot, what does that mean in your world?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I must say we struggled with that a bit in our past. So we started off, I think, just doing pilot projects. And but maybe to sort of give you the variations that we discussed first before we dive into a specific one. So pilot project. So you define a project and you run a project. And after the, well, a project always has an end. So then the challenge is, how do we come from that end to something that is sustainable? Then from the pilots, we went into variations of trials, like we did like a month trial, we did a 2-week trial, a guided trial, a free trial, all kinds of trialing to see if that works. But then often the commitment was a bit too low. So in the end, now I think we have a bit of a mix. I like the model where we say like, okay, we'll sell you a subscription, but you have an opt-out after 2 months. So we'll define a pilot period as part of the contract, because the one of the benefits is that for us, we always need to do the paperwork. So what we experience is, if you can do a pilot, nobody's really worried about that. And then when you finalize the pilot, it takes you 3 months to do your IT security review, your privacy policy stuff, your contracting, and you lose a lot of time. And you have these gaps in also your revenue. Eh? So you have revenue coming from the pilot, and then it drops, and then it ups again. So it's very, very troublesome in managing the business. Yeah. So I think that model works best for us. Just like a yearly subscription with a 2 months opt-out, starting somewhere. And what then is very important, of course, is to defend the opt-out. So there it is really important to, at the beginning, define the clear KPIs, have the buy-in. You already have some buy-in because they have to sign off on a number.
Right.
So there is already a subscription number behind it. So they take it seriously. So without money attached to it, the commitment is just too low. So you need to have a commitment, both in terms of we spend money and we dedicate resources, and then clear KPIs and make sure that you are comfortable in hitting them, and make sure that the company is doing everything to hit them, so that at the opt-out point, you actually don't have a discussion and it's already like, yeah, for sure, it's a go.
Makes a lot of sense. So I'm curious then, in your world, from your perspective, what is it that the 2-month opt-out period gives them in terms of confidence that they can sign versus them signing right off without the opt-out period?
Yeah, that's also a good one. So first, of course, if when we start, we tell a bit about who we are. We have our demos so they can see the solution. But we see, especially in manufacturing, where there are a lot of engineers involved, that they want to get their hands on the thing. So one of the elements is already getting the hands on the thing and experience it themselves, which is a very basic need. But also, is it as good as it looks in the presentation? So can it really make an impact on our business? And it's also a bit of education. Eh? A solution like SwipeGuide is relatively new for manufacturing companies. So they have to see how this makes an impact coming from paper documentation, Word, Excel files, to a solution that's completely new, and how that resonates with their audience, for instance, and how that moves the needle on their KPIs.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So there, I think it's always important to see where do you struggle now in your operations, pick some of these cases, make it small,
right,
and then show that we actually can impact.
So is it a hard requirement? Do you always require in 10 out of 10 pilot cases that there is a signed contract and that there is a transactional exercise involved?
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's what I wanted to ask, that if this is something that you do within your contract, or is it something in the sales process that you have the more challenging customers that before they buy, they want to try it out or see some kind of proof of concept and so.
Yeah, with the enterprise organizations, it's often like, okay, we're interested and we have a first pilot site and we want to start there. And then it's often within that pilot site, it's one specific production line. And there we want to try it out. So it's pretty much focused on a specific, I would say, use case. So to give an example, on Heineken, we started on a packaging line for six packs of beer cans, where there were some issues in operating that specific piece of equipment. Then we documented the procedures in Swipe Guide, put it in the hands of the operators, have them trained and use it in their work. And then we saw an impact on the productivity there. So in manufacturing terms, it's OEE, so overall equipment effectiveness went up by, I think, in the first pilot phase, at least 10%. Mm. So then you talk impact. If you sort of calculate that across a brewery and across a whole enterprise company, that's of course money that you will be saving.
Okay.
All right. So when you actually then start planning for the pilot, you mentioned a little bit it's important to set up key metrics or KPIs that you follow. So tell us, like, what are some of the key metrics and KPIs that you guys instill and make sure, like, let's agree on these, this is what we're measuring, and if we can check these boxes, then it's a success.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think when you look at one of the challenges that you always have is that some of the impact is lagging. So if you talk about OEE in 2 months, you really need to have your measurements in place. So what was the OEE before? What is the OEE after? And are we tracking that well enough? So that is always a discussion. We also have a discussion sometimes around a KPI in time to competency. So can we prove that we are able? One of our claims is that we can have your people onboarded like 30% quicker than with your traditional training approaches. But of course, that also in 2 months is sometimes challenging because they don't have the zero measurement in all cases. And then being able to measure that is quite challenging. So we always put some metrics in there that are easier to measure and where of course, we are also confident that our solution makes an impact. That stuff around like, do the people have the sentiment that it helps them in their work? Do they like the solution? Is the editing process capturing the content easy? If we talk about the skills management, is it leading to quicker population of the skill matrix and more real-time information on the competencies of your people? So sometimes we stay a bit closer to the solution, but most powerful is, of course, impact on the business KPIs.
So just to be super clear, is there some kind of a structured format, a template? So do you produce a document of any kind together with the customer where you agree and said like, okay, here are the milestones. We slap some dates on it. Here is, you know, what's considered to be success versus not success. Is there such a working document that you then base this off?
Yeah, we have, that's completely blueprinted. Yeah. So we pull up our standard blueprint for running these, call them pilots then, the first stages of proving the value of the solution. No, it's completely blueprinted. So we have KPI suggestions. We have sort of a nice timeline. We have the sessions all mapped out that we have, and we always end up with a survey and with an evaluation session with the stakeholders.
All right.
And in these blueprints, do you also list the resource allocation required? Do you demand a certain resource allocation from the customer? Or you're very specific where you go and say, like, we need person X to commit these hours or person Y to be here at a certain time and so on.
Yeah, we in the blueprint, it's pretty clear because you select the use cases. So we talk about, okay, where are we going to start? Is it indeed a packaging line, a filler machine, a welding machine, whatever piece of equipment or part of the production line is sort of in scope. And then we have clear time allocation. So these are the sessions that we're going to do. This is sort of the time that you need to allocate, very clear timeline and roadmap, all the technical requirements. So make sure that for every use case, you at least have a tablet at the line, have your internet connectivity in place. So all of these requirements, are part of that blueprint. So we check them off in the beginning to make sure that we can run a successful pilot phase and communicate that with the customer to make sure that everything is smooth. Because when you're piloting, you want to make sure that everything is smooth, that you have a great experience,
yep,
and you hit the KPI so that at an opt-out moment, there's no no discussion. Like, I think we have a 99% hit rate from pilots to then continuation of the contract.
Wow.
Wow.
I don't think I've heard of such a percentage. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I think it's part, of course, that, yeah, we believe, of course, in the product. It's also that the customer already needs to put some effort in to get a pilot started.
Yeah.
And then the pilot is blueprinted. So we make sure that we set ourselves up for success. Yeah.
All right. So I don't know if you want to share this, but how big an investment is it for one of your customers to sort of do these 2 months and do the pilot? Where are we at?
It varies a bit on the solution that they're obtaining, because yeah, we have 2 modules, some add-ons. So it's first scoping the solution a bit, but it can be as small as a 10, 15K first initial investment up to like 25K.
Okay, so it's reasonable. I mean, for a big enterprise, it's not a super big investment.
No, for an enterprise, it's small. But yeah, for us, always the dynamic is when you land on the enterprise level, these numbers are not a big deal. But no, often the budgets in manufacturing are on a site level. So then you make sure that the site in the end pays for it. So it depends a bit on who's allocating the budget, if it's a discussion or not. But in the beginning, we did a lot of pilot projects, and then like 25, 50K for an enterprise is no problem when you enter from a digital department. But then we always had to battle, now go sell it to the sites. And then the whole sales cycle started all over again. So everybody in digital innovation happy, everybody in operations on site level still thinking like, okay, what are we getting from the solution? So
did you start charging for the pilots from the beginning, or was that something that you sort of after a while started to do when you got more confidence?
No, we started for really like pilot projects and the sort of subscription with the 2 month opt out always paid. We did some free trials at some point of 2 to 4 weeks.
Okay.
And there we indeed experienced that it's sometimes harder to get the commitment. So it's a bit more loose, and that's not good, because you really want to have the engagement and the commitment to make it a success together. So yeah. Sometimes we still get the request, hey, can we use it for free for a week to just put our hands on it? And we're always pretty reluctant. So try to bend them towards, hey, you have a subscription 2 months opt out.
Okay.
To make sure that we also hit all the steps that we have to take in the sales process anyway, by having IT look at it, having legal look at the contracts, and so on and so on.
Yeah. So who's running the pilot from your side?
It's always a combination of people from our customer success team and then the customer success manager with a customer enablement person, as we call it.
Okay. And is that sort of a technical person, or is it more of a business advisor?
It's more of a sort of the, I would say the CSM is more like the account manager,
yeah,
and the customer enablement person more the subject matter expert, or the consultant, so to say, looking at the use cases, what is the best way of tackling them. So that is the combo that we have on these phases, and on onboarding in general, I must say.
All right. I mean, it's one thing to do a successful pilot, but then in an enterprise, I guess you start somewhere, you do a smaller scope, you do it in one part of the enterprise. How do you make sure to expand that account? I mean, that must be an important and big exercise as well for you guys.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. Indeed, we're often on a land and expand model. So you land in the first site and then expand, and there it is pretty interesting. It depends a bit on also the culture in the organization. So with like for instance with the Heineken case with Don't Get Ready, Get Started, they were pretty much promoting it and pretty loose. So we grew there from the first site with the first production line to I think 80 breweries within 6 months. And then at some point they were like, holy shit, this is going really, really quick. So maybe we have to put some safety elements in place. So then IT got involved and we sort of put an MSA, like a master service agreement in place and controlled it a bit. So there we were really quick from the mentality, like we want to innovate and we want to give this the room and the freedom to scale quickly. In other cases, we sometimes see that you prove the case in one side, that side has budget and you have to do your sales process in every side again because there's no central budget, but it's all local. And then we try to do more of, maybe account-based marketing like campaigns. We set up a specific landing page for a customer, do some promotion videos, webinars, but then you have to sell every individual site. But for us, that's critical. I think last year, when you look at our growth numbers, the even the majority of the revenue that came in was from expansion when you compare that to new business. So it's often new business starts smaller, so you have more new business clients coming in, but the revenue number of growth from expansion is bigger.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was wondering again about this blueprint, because I can imagine sometimes these big customers, they're so used to get their ways and their will through and so on. Do you force them into a set of, call it, use cases during your pilot that you know you're going to have success with? Or are you open to also be like, okay, Heineken wants to do this, which is like, we don't normally do that during the two-man period, but it's Heineken, so let's figure it out somehow.
Well, actually, it's a bit of negotiation, but we had some misses. So where we really leave it open, and then you sometimes see that if a customer is really strict on we want to tackle this use case or that use case, then it's harder to set yourself up for success. So to give you an example, like doing a changeover on a packaging machine is a relatively complex case where if you make mistakes, you're like further down the supply chain. So there's already a lot of value created. So if you make mistakes there, it's costly.
Right.
But I remember we had a case where the customer really wanted to do a pilot use case in, what was it? I think the warehouse, like labeling the pallets that go out. It's more of a logistics case, which was way, way simpler. And then I think we need a bit of complexity to really make that impact.
Right.
So we want to guide them, but often just like raising the question, where is your biggest pain? It's already in an area where the losses that they have are pretty expensive. So it's also a matter of asking the right questions. But if a customer is really pushy, we want to do this and that. For us, it's always looking at, okay, is this impact that we can make here big enough?
Okay. So otherwise, is there any particular pitfalls or anything that you really should avoid when you do pilots, do you think?
I think we covered already quite a bit of them. I think commitment from the customer side is critical. I think in the process of selling a pilot, already knowing the DMU, so knowing the stakeholders that need to be involved. If it's just a single person that wants to trial your software, like in an enterprise environment, at least for our type of business, that's not a great case. So you need to understand a bit more about the challenges, about the decision, or already about the product. So what you do in sales qualification normally, already understand the process a bit and stuff like that, is important to make it successful. And for us, it was mainly that if you start a pilot and then still have to do a 6 to 9 month sales process afterwards, that for us was really the challenge why we chose just do the subscription. It will take a bit longer to get to the pilot, but then the expansion and landing the thing that you want, and that is a subscription, is easier afterwards.
Right.
Okay, I must ask here, I don't know if you said it before, so do you need to actively cancel your subscription?
You have to opt out. So yeah. the thing that you, of course, have with this opt-out period is that we define the KPIs in the beginning. We try to set customers up for success. We have our measurements and surveys in place. We present them in the evaluation session.
Yeah.
And then it's, of course, hard to opt out if all the lights are green.
Of course. But how much time do you have to opt out? Let's say it's a 60-day period. Can you opt out like 7 days before, or does it need to be 15 days? Or
no, I think it's in the final week you have to decide. It's a go, no go moment, I think.
All right. So,
but in these go, no go moments, you must have ended up in conversations where people are like, ah, can we not just do this for another 2 months?
Yeah, that's it. That's a good one. I think in most cases, we can more or less round it off because of the blueprinting. So we have the clear steps that we conclude anyway.
Right.
So I don't remember. Remembering sort of the having time lags was mainly from the fact that we did it standalone and then we needed to go to other parts of the organization to get to a subscription. That was killing in most of our cases because, like, I remember cases where indeed it took like then after a pilot 6 to 9 months, you lose all the momentum.
Yeah,
that's not great.
So if we try to summarize this, you've already shared lots of good ideas and how you guys manage this. But if we summarize it to the ones that are considering doing pilots or maybe are struggling a little bit with the pilots, what would be your best 3 tips how you can secure success with pilot projects?
I think the 3 tips for me would be one, think about how you want to do pilots. Like, do you want to do what is sort of the setup, the approach to it? So we deliberately at some point chose to make it part of a subscription, for instance, but you can still do projects or free trials or whatever setup you want. So I think the structure is important. Then the commitment and KPI. So make sure that people commit time to work with you to make it successful, because at least for a solution like SwipeGuide, you need that. We can't do it for the customer. They need to commit to it and commit to the KPIs with the measurement in place. I think that is very important as well. I think that were already 3 points. So I think these are the core elements that I would say think about. What is indeed your approach or blueprint, commitment, KPIs.
All right. Very good tips. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah. Been really interesting to hear about your company and your how you work with the pilots and everything. And looking forward here a little bit, what's the future for SwipeGuide?
Yeah, that's a great question. Of course, for us, it's we want to continue to grow in our space. So the bigger space that we're in is what was called connected worker. And within the connected worker space, we want to be the solution for frontline enablement. So make sure that people in the frontline have the knowledge and skills and are supported in their work to do the best job possible. So for the coming years, that means that we want to add additional functionalities to the system. So last year, we launched the skills management. We're now working on more like checklist improvements to make sure that we can also help frontline workers capture data, integrate training and skills development more in the workflow, connect to new technologies, implement all the stuff that every SaaS company works on, like AI. What can we do with AI to make sure that our platform becomes more intelligent and even more smooth for our clients? And then when you look at more like the commercial side, just grow at the healthy pace that we're at the moment. Grow the team, make sure that things don't break, and expand with our existing customers. So just make sure that we continue on the path that we're at.
You know what they say, Dan, like, you know, when you grow really fast, some things have to break. That's somehow the proof that you're growing really fast.
Yeah, no, I remember the quote. I think it's from a Formula One driver, but I believe some things can break, but in an enterprise environment, there are certain things that you don't want to have break. So we have to be pretty strict in sort of the security, privacy.
Yeah.
So there we want to be secure. Of course, we're pretty scalable. I think it's healthy to go quickly because you can solve a lot of things on the go then, but we also want to keep our team healthy and I think that's also important. So
yeah.
Parts of the organization can go a bit quicker, others we have to be a bit more careful.
Yeah,
that's well put.
I mean, it helps you to prioritize as well.
Yeah.
So to fuel that growth, is there anything particular that you are looking for right now?
The first thing that we're looking for is to get to our break-even point. So
okay.
We have that planned for June, July this year. So that gives us a comfortable position that we sort of have a viable business. From there, we have to see what the direction will be. I think at some point, we have a very clear product strategy. So we want to build more, and probably we want to build a bit more than our free cash flow
yeah.
will then afford. So it could be that at some point towards the end of the next year or of this year, we will look at, okay, is there a feasible investment scenario for an additional round? But of course, if we grow quick enough, we can also fund at least part of that development ourselves. So, but hitting break even is the first milestone now.
You know what's going to happen now that you said this. Now, there's a bunch of investors listening to these episodes. Be prepared to be bombarded. Your email box is going to be full now.
Yeah. Yeah, luckily my co-founder is handling the investor relationships.
So is there any particular talent that you would like to add to your team as well?
For us, I think sort of moving beyond break even, definitely on the product side. I think we put a lot of effort in producing a solution for non-digital workers, so to say. So it has to be very easy. So for us, UX, UI design is very critical. So we probably want to extend the team there a bit. And on the engineering side, I think on customer success side, probably when we land more customers, we need a bit more, especially on the US side of the team. And then in sales, of course, when you grow, you want to add people there. So we have sales teams in the US and in EU, rest of the world, so to say. And I think it will be expansion and talent across these parts of the company.
All right. So lastly, is there any person or any topic that you think we should feature here on the show?
I think for us, I think an interesting topic that we experienced that was for us a hard nut to crack, I must say, in the past, is how do you get to a predictable growth in an enterprise environment? Indeed, with these pilots and then moving to subscriptions and then expansion at different paces. That was for us one of the very interesting topics. Like, what are the mechanics to get there? Or what are the signs that you're not there yet? Because everybody talks about product market fit, and from there it should go easy. Well, I can tell you that's not the case.
Right.
Product market fit is something that is pretty ambiguous, at least in our experience. And then if you have pilots and a market that is not really mature and customers that are so different in their culture towards innovation, predictability is pretty hard. So that would be a very interesting topic, I would say, at least from our perspective.
Mm. Indeed it will. I think we need to see who we can get on the podcast to talk about that, because I think you hit something that is critical and crucial for so many here, especially when you're selling towards the enterprise side. So let's see what we can do on that end and who we can find. And if you're listening to this episode and you feel like that's me, well, in that case, reach out to Thomas and myself and let's see if we can do something together. Dan, this was fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing great insights. Very much appreciated. And best of success to you going forward here.
Yep. Thank you very much. Thanks, Thomas. Thanks, Daniel. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. See you around.
See you.
So, Daniel, what's your takeaway this time?
Everybody with the name Daniel is destined for success.
Okay.
Clearly, Dan is going places. Dan is going places. Now, all jokes aside, I appreciated many things he said. If there's one thing I want to push forward to everybody here is to make sure before you start the actual pilot that you agree on this blueprint that he referred to, but also agree on the terms and the pricing and so on. Because the worst thing that can happen is that you run a pilot project. So they test your actual product, it works out, and then you're not going to get it through their procurement department for whatever reason because you can't check a security box or you're too small or whatnot. So that's just a waste of time. So make sure you upfront get that commitment from them with this opt-out function. I really appreciate that. I think it's an excellent idea and one that we start to see more and more. But it requires some planning exercise. Thomas, what about you?
No, but I think my takeaway is that working like this, doing a pilot at probably one part of the operation and so on, you need to plan for and have a strategy when it comes to the land and expand exercise. Because if you don't have that, then you might have a successful pilot in a small part of the organization and then it don't scale. So it must be a challenge for sure, but there is a big payoff if you do it right.
Very true. And you know what the best part is? That now you got a teaser here. Dan is actually coming to Amsterdam and he's going to speak on one of the stages there where he's going to dig into this a little bit more. You know, he's going to give us his blueprint. Who knows? Hey, maybe there's a template that we all can use to run our pilot project successfully. So Dan, when you're listening to this, be prepared. We're now expecting some artifacts for you and templates.
Yeah, for sure. So again, thank you for listening expect a lot of more content from us during the late spring here and in the summer. Also, we will do meetups in the Benelux area, in the Netherlands and in Belgium here sometime during May. So hope to see you in person there. Also, running all year is our CEO network and executive networks. You can read more about them on sasius.com. And besides that, we wish you a great rest of the week and I hope to see you soon.
Take care now.